the Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. The Honorable Judges Frisch, Werke, and Gaitis, Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated, everyone. All right, good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is February 14, 2024. We have four cases on our calendar today. The first case is A23-1112, Brooks versus Crudo. Counsel, you're familiar with our procedures. You'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. I'd ask that you state your name and identify your client before you begin speaking and let us know if there's any particular way that we can reference you today. These matters are being recorded. That is the only recording that is permitted. And with that, counsel, I believe we're ready for our argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. I represent AB in this case. And
your name, counsel?
And my name is Michael Bryant.
Thank you.
So thank you for this opportunity. I'm glad to be back here in person versus in Zoom, although Zoom works pretty good. I think it's important in this type of case to keep in mind that the case is AB's case. AB was abused on those two separate chunks of time. And despite respondents' claims that there's allegations, no, we know that it happened. The question is whether or not we have liability upon the defendants for supervision in this case. Our argument is based upon the case law, which is the reasonable parent standard. We have some other issues with this particular defendant, but the key part is it's AB's case, and that's what the focus should be on.
Counsel, is there a distinction, a legal distinction between the negligence claim and the negligence supervision claim? I don't know that the Venn diagram is, the two circles are completely overlapping, or if there's some separation there. Are we just alleging negligence and you're just calling it two different things?
Well, the negligent supervision is the claim.
Well, there's two claims in the complaint, or you identify two claims in
correct.
The complaint. And I'm trying to discern whether there is a difference between, a meaningful, legally significant difference between negligence and negligent supervision.
No, I don't think so.
So it's one negligence claim, essentially.
Correct.
Okay.
And I think that when the argument's made, the one negligence claim somehow means that there was just one incident, that's not supported by what we understand to be the facts or not supported by what we have in the complaint. And that's important because this is only a motion to dismiss. It's not a summary judgment motion. It's a motion to dismiss. And so based upon that, do we have a prima facie case based upon our complaint? And do we allege enough facts that we should be able to go on into discovery? And our position is that we do, that we have the facts that are necessary in order to go forward based upon this complaint. The respondents do an interesting positioning of saying we didn't do something and then reading directly from our complaint and quoting directly from our complaint. Well, we do make that claim. The key issue is the reasonable parent standard. Does the parent have responsibility as far as negligence, or is enough alleged so that we can go forward in discovery? And our position is yes.
Is it possible to determine what a reasonable parent would do if we don't know the ages of the children? And do the ages of the children affect what a reasonable parent would be expected to do?
Well, we do know the ages of the children. They're minors, which to me is the significant part of it. They're not.
Well, wouldn't you agree that there's a significant difference between a 17-year-old and a 5-year-old?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and the closer you get to 18, we struggle with that in a number of different areas of the law. The closer you get to 18 is whether we treat them like adults or not. But they're minors in this case, and AB is the younger minor in this case, and based upon that, that's where the claim lays. And I don't think that in this particular case, it's not a situation where we had minors who then became adults or something different. We also,
So maybe the ages of the children matter if you end up getting to a jury trial and you're looking at awareness and
sure
contribution and all of that.
Sure. That's could come at that point, but you still don't get them beyond being
but
minors.
But is it detrimental to your pleading not to include it at this point?
We do know that.
I mean, other than the fact that they're minors?
Detrimental to our pleadings.
Well, you were dismissed on that basis, that you failure to state a claim.
Well, we were dismissed looking at it. When you look at the footnote, we seem to be getting dismissed because it's really our client's parents' fault, which that, to me, is a fact. And that's the court getting to a fact. But beyond that, it is a absolute, it's an absolute, when you read our pleadings are specific and allow for a prima facie case based upon the reasonable parent standard. It's all there and what necessary
parental
to go
negligence
forward.
Negligence theory.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, because that's the negligent supervision. If we had intentional tort, then it wouldn't, it'd be a total different case as far as the parents go. And so based upon the negligence and the idea that because we didn't bring came for the earlier parts because we don't have a good faith basis to know that the parent knew at that time. But the parent's the one who found out about the first part, the first time period. So they clearly knew something was going on. They found it. They found the photographs. And that's the basis for our claim. And based upon that basis of the claim, we should be able to go forward into discovery. And then see where the case goes from there. Are there issues that could come up in front of a jury? Sure. But that doesn't mean we should get stopped now and should be prevented from moving forward or dismissed just based upon the pleadings. The pleadings are clear about what we're asking for and what our claim is. It's not a, and it's hard to not look at the opinion and see that there was fact-finding that was in opposition to the position that you take our facts is true. And if anything's close, you take them in our favor as far as the start of the complaint goes, as far as the start of the case goes. And based upon that, based upon the case law, it's our position that we should have been able at that point to go forward and get into discovery and go where this case should have gone and protect this AB for what they lost, the damages that was done to them. Do we have other questions or?
Anything else from the panel?
I don't.
It appears not.
Okay. Then I'll be back up and reply.
All
thank
right.
You.
Very good. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Thank you, counsel.
Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Andrew Case, and I represent the respondents in this case, Tracy Crudo and the minor with the initials VC. This matter is before the court on a Rule 12 dismissal, and for the reasons that I will explain here in just a moment, the district court arrived at the correct decision in dismissing the complaint under Rule 12 for failure to state a claim. The district court did not engage in fact-finding. While counsel alleges that the district court's opinion is riddled with statements of rulings on fact issues, the district court did not engage in fact fighting. What the district court did.
I mean, the district court and also your brief, counsel, when I read them both, I'm struck by the focus on the sufficiency of the factual allegations, and we are in a notice pleading state. So I'm not even sure that there needs to be detailed factual allegations, which it seems as though both your briefing and the district court suggest.
Well, I appreciate and understand that this is a notice pleading state. There is still a minimum requirement to set out the elements, and that has to be based on factual allegations.
So, why if the pleading identifies the elements, why is there a necessity
to put you on notice of what the claim is, why is there a necessity of additional factual allegations? And what's the legal basis for that argument?
So, for example, the Herbert case that's cited in our brief mentions how the district court is not bound by legal conclusions at the notice pleading stage. So when the district court was analyzing the complaint, it was not bound by the legal conclusion, for example, that Ms. Crudo was vicariously liable for the acts of her son, or that Ms.
Crudo... What about the allegation that she had a duty? Is that a legal assertion or a factual assertion?
So the issue of duty and foreseeability, based on this court's precedent, is generally an issue that can be decided by the courts as a legal issue before it's submitted to a jury. And what the district court did here is it assumed the facts in the complaint as true and still found that there was insufficient facts pled in order to support the claims.
So what kind of facts would need to have been pled in this case?
Well, so for example, Your Honor, several of the elements are only established in the complaint by pleading the element in and of itself. It's not a fact. It's just pleading that the element occurred.
There's a parent and child, and therefore there's a duty to supervise the child.
Yes. By just alleging that there is a duty without establishing why the duty exists or any facts supporting how the duty was imposed in these unique circumstances, then just bare bones pleading the elements of a cause of action is insufficient, even under our notice pleading standards.
And what do we make of the fact that the rules of civil procedure identify those types of causes of action where additional specific pleading is required, and this type of negligence claim is not among those kinds of claims?
So, for example, as Your Honor inquiring about under Rule 8, where fraud would have to be pled with specificity. So you're asking what the distinction would be between that situation and here?
Well, because the rule doesn't identify a parental negligence claim as a type of action that requires a heightened pleading or additional specificity, why would we add that to the rule?
Understood. I don't think that is what we would be doing here, and I don't think that we need to add a specific requirement for negligence or negligence supervision in this context. All respondents' position is on this point is that there is still a minimum requirement in order to lay out enough facts to meet the notice pleading standards such that a cause of action for a legally viable claim is set forth in the complaint.
So what would that minimum pleading look like?
So, for example, instead of just giving the bare bones element for one of the, elements of the cause of action, there would have to be facts that support that. And on top of that, the district court, although it's required to assume the facts as true and draw reasonable inferences, again, the inferences it's entitled to draw are only those which are reasonable based on the facts in the complaint. I believe we have a case cited in our brief that discusses how essentially drawing inferences within inferences in a complaint doesn't meet the minimal standard.
So let's take the foreseeability allegation by way of example. So the complaint contains allegations that the parents knew that there was some bad behavior that had occurred in the past and that gave rise to a duty to supervise this child from engaging in the same kind of bad behavior in the future. And the district court, for some reason, discredited the fact that bad behavior had occurred in the past, it doesn't necessarily create some sort of foreseeability that bad behavior might occur in the future such that a duty would arise between parent and child. What is deficient about that pleading for the foreseeability element?
So
that's pretty specific.
Understood. So my response to that would be it's not that piece alone, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's deficient or lacking. That point specifically that Your Honor just raised is actually self-defeated by the other allegations in the complaint, such that the district court could not reasonably draw an inference that Ms. Crudo had a duty to supervise based on dangerous propensities that she knew about. And the reason it's self-negated, as the district court explained, is because if both sets of parents had the exact same knowledge and made a decision based on that knowledge, then how can one parent be held to a different standard as unreasonable and the other set be considered essentially reaching a different result.
I mean, that seems to me like a resolution that needs to be made by a fact finder as opposed to the district court. I'm not aware of any legal authority that would allow a district court to cut off the knees of a plaintiff at the Rule 12 stage because of potentially inconsistent allegations, as you're describing. Is there some authority for that?
Well, I guess I would refer the court to the authority where foreseeability and negligence is generally addressed by the courts, because essentially when there's allegations in the complaint that are essentially self-negating, even when all facts in the complaint are assumed as true, and duty is still not present based on the facts alleged or cannot be imputed based on actual factual allegations rather than mere legal conclusions.
You have frequently said that there is statements in the complaint that are self-negating.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you mean.
So, for example, and I believe our brief lays this piece out, but essentially by imputing a duty of negligence based on prior knowledge of past misconduct, so to speak, if both sets of parents had the same amount of information.
Isn't that something that goes on to be resolved through discovery? I mean, these are allegations.
I understand what the court is getting at. Our position is that if the court can look at the facts, assume them all as true, and still decide the issue of duty or foreseeability be as a legal issue based on what's alleged, and it's not able to draw a reasonable inference that would support the cause of action, then at the Rule 12 stage, dismissal is still appropriate, and it wouldn't necessarily fall within the purview of fact-finding.
I mean, you've said a few times now that duty is something that is, and foreseeability are issues that are determined as a matter of law, and I think that may have been true 10 years ago, but in the last 10 years, the Supreme Court, at the summary judgment stage, has made it very clear that these questions are going to the jury now, the Blake School case, for example. So how do you reconcile the position you're taking now with the jurisprudence that the Supreme Court has developed over the last 10 years?
Well, I guess I would refer back to pages 2 and 3 of the district court's order. One thing that I found unique about the district court's order, but actually quite helpful to its analysis, is it lays out a list of factual allegations from the complaint, and then it lays out a list of legal conclusions. And if you look at the two, and you look at just the factual allegations, there is not enough to establish the elements of the claims there. And if you look at the legal conclusions,
What do you mean by establish the elements of a claim? I mean, state the claim? I mean, that's what we're dealing with
correct.
At this stage. I mean, correct. Establishing a summary judgment. Stating is now.
Stating a claim is when I'm, for purposes of Rule 12, if I've used establish, I've meant stating for purposes of the pleading.
Okay.
As far as the factual allegations versus the legal conclusions, when the court looks at both of those lists, it becomes quite apparent that there was some factual allegations, but it wasn't enough to establish the elements of negligent supervision. And for the reasons I've already stated, as to the duty element, duty was not established based on the prior knowledge. Because again, if one parent is held to the standard that prior knowledge should impute some sort of duty to supervise or control a dangerous propensity, then if the other set of parents has the exact same knowledge, that from a reasonable parent standard, the risk is essentially negated by the passage of 2 years' time and the mutual decision to allow the children to continue playing together.
What about the statement in the complaint as to count one, paragraph 8, defendant Crudo is vicariously liable for the unpermitted, harmful, et cetera, conduct. Is that a factual allegation or is that a legal conclusion in your view?
In respondent's view, that would be a legal conclusion because essentially just arguing or asserting that somebody is liable or asserting that someone's negligence without providing the supporting facts or any supporting facts in any way, doesn't meet the notice pleading standard.
I asked appellant's counsel whether the complaint could be sufficient without identifying or stating the ages of the minors involved. And I think appellant said, yeah. What is your response to that question? Was that a critical fact that wasn't stated in the complaint, or would, do you agree with appellant's counsel that it doesn't matter?
I would. Our position is that the lack of description as to the ages of the children is another fatal flaw of the complaint.
Well, they are identified as minor children. If they're identified as minor children, I mean, you know, below the age of 18.
Well, I understand that minor child is under the age of 18. That is, as the court highlighted earlier in its questions, that is quite a wide range of ages, one to 18. And so the relative age of the children is a critical fact because it'll determine the level of supervision that would be required. It would determine the reasonableness in which the actions of a particular parent in supervising that child was or was not reasonable under the circumstances.
Well, I don't mean to piggyback on Judge Gaetis's question, but that's what I'm getting at. Is it detrimental to the complaint that the ages aren't specified, that it's minor, date of birth, whatever the date of birth was?
I would argue that it is detrimental.
Wouldn't we be saying something rather broad if we would agree with you and we would decide that it's that as far as our notice pleading state that you have to be say something besides minor when you're referring to a child?
Well, that's a good question, Your Honor. I don't believe that would be the dispositive controlling factor here as to whether or not the complaint survives Rule 12, but I think it's yet another reason that adds to why the complaint is deficient.
Is it, I mean, when you look at the allegation of minor children and coupled with the allegations of sexual contact, which is ostensibly illegal, would that be sufficient, those two allegations taken together, to form a reasonable inference that the duty arises under Minnesota law?
And I apologize, Your Honor, could you repeat that?
Well, when you're dealing with a minor and you're dealing with sexual contact, which is ostensibly illegal, and you couple those two facts together, when you couple them together, can that give rise to a reasonable inference that a parent has a duty to prevent the child from engaging in criminal behavior?
Understood. And that's a good question. So I believe the Buell case and Buell and the Anderson versus Stream addresses that. As far as
Well, would it be criminal behavior if they were two?
That's an interesting question. I hadn't thought about, you know, at that age level what the impact would be. However, I think that what it comes back to is the case law on Buell and Anderson discusses the relative ages, or sorry, discusses the reasonable parent standard and sets forth the standard in which we're supposed to be analyzing this. And I'm sorry, Judge Gaetis, could you repeat your last question on that?
It was more of a rhetorical question, and your time is up. So.
Apologies. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, counsel. Counsel, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have a couple of issues or a couple things to talk about based upon that argument, based upon overall. It's hard to read the footnote that was added about my client's parents and not say the court didn't get involved in fact-finding. The question you asked about establishment versus what you have to state, that is significant here because this motion was brought to dismiss based upon the complaint. And every time we get into this issue of what's in the complaint, the complaint gets quoted. The complaint, it's not a situation where anybody's saying, oh, can't quote it because it doesn't exist. All the basis here for the claim exists in this complaint. All the claim for AB exists where this case should go forward. And to back it up and to say that somehow in the reasonable parent standard and looking at Anderson and looking at Buell, well, how do we look at it? Do we look at it as whether or not those claims have been stated? They've clearly been stated. We state that the knowledge, we state the duties that they have, we state the different parts of the reasonable parent standard in the complaint. It's all there.
But to then jump forward and say, well, then we'll take that and we'll go through it and we'll come up with some facts and we'll talk about the AB's parents and we'll talk about other issues that are all issues for a jury is wrong at this state. And I would submit would be wrong at summary judgment, but we don't even need to get there because this isn't a summary judgment matter. And there could be, after discovery, there could be arguments that are made that are based upon direct discovery. That's a different standard that takes place in the summary judgment. But everything is here in this complaint. Everything that we need under the law in Minnesota, under what we're required to do with summons and complaint, is enough to have this go forward and have this get into the discovery stage. Do you have any other questions, or?
Counsel?
No.
I'm sorry, my colleagues?
And I
we
did,
do not.
You were correct in answering the question, so or in the way I answered the question as far as minor.
Oh, good.
That is what I said, because I think it's the minor that's all that matters.
All right,
and
we do not.
That they're a parent is all that matters. That's all we need in the complaint, and that's why it should go forward. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted. Thank you very much, counsel, for your respective arguments. We will issue an opinion within the statutory time period.